Shalom Aleichem, Rabbeisai. Okay, so we are in Chavis Halvavis, Shal Avodas Olikim, Perek Gimel, the third Perek, and the Lev Tov, well, in my edition, it's page Kuf Tzadi Zayin. In the English edition, it's page 250. We are in the middle of a profound discussion of understanding the relationship between serving Hashem as in keeping the laws of the Torah, the what we've been calling the externally imposed system of serving Hashem, and what we're calling the internally driven system of Avodas Hashem. When a person is driven he's not keeping a set of laws because there's promise of reward and threat of punishment, but rather he has his own internal drive to get as close as Hashem to Hashem as he can, and to serve Hashem just because he appreciates the privilege and he's driven by gratitude. So the Chavis Halvavis is telling us that the first is a stepping stone to the second. And he's been explaining to us why that's so, why it's important to ultimately get to the second, why that brings you to a higher place than just sticking with the first. And we saw a number of aspects last week. We're going to start this week from the fourth. He's giving us seven reasons, or seven explanations. And now he's giving us the fourth, Varavi. This is something profound to understand. The Haravi, number four is, Ki Avoda Shimin HaTorah, he lays down an intricate mashal here. He lays down an intricate mashal. Let's understand it. Avoda Shimin HaTorah, the serving Hashem in the context of, I was given a Torah, I have to obey it, I'm following its laws. It's what brings a person to the threshold, for the avoida that comes from the inside, from the seichel, the internally driven avoida. And he gives a mashal as follows. Vehi kigargir hazarua. It's like the seichel, a person's mind. I really prefer to use the word psyche, the whole system of mind and heart together, okay? A person's inner consciousness, okay? It's like a seed planted in the ground. You, let's talk about you, okay? You are a seed planted in the ground. A seed is something raw. In and of itself, it's small, it's not much, but it has amazing potential for growth. And then you come and apply to that seed the Torah, the system of the Torah, the mitzvahs, the averis that we're told to do, the externally imposed system, and that has the effect of a Torah law ka'avayda la'adama. It has the effect of working, it's like working the ground. V'charishasa v'nakoisa. It's like plowing and cleaning, fertilizing the ground. That's what that's the effect that the Torah has. So you have you, your seichel, your heart, your psyche, is planted in the ground. Now the Torah is coming and preparing it for sprouting. And then the assistance that comes from Hashem is kamotah hamashke oisa. So in other words, you have you. You come and you work yourself over through the Torah. Now you're like a seed that is lying in fertile ground with potential for growth. Then you have siyata d'shmaya kicks in. As you apply yourself to the Torah, as you apply yourself to the rules of the Torah, Hashem comes and starts moving the process ahead. He starts granting you sensitivities. He starts granting you insight. He starts granting you a sense of growth, a sense of fulfillment. Certain convictions start settling in. And that is like the rain that is causing the seed to start sprouting in that fertile ground. And then, what's the next step? You have the seed planted in a fertile ground, and then rain comes down on it, and then a plant starts growing, and it starts sprouting, and it grows more, and it can turn into a big, magnificent tree. So that is like kemashi iskayim balavavas ma'avodas odikim lishmoy. That, what is the tree as far as you go? It is the whole you that will then emerge, as a, with the whole inner developed system of avodas Hashem. I was making an intricate, subtle mashal here, and I want to try to bring it home a little bit more from a few different directions. Let me just give one simple, like a practical example. There's a din that, what do you do when you see a siddur on the floor? You probably rush over and pick it up. It's probably almost instinctive. Let's say you're in the middle of sitting down, you're having lunch, and you suddenly notice there's a siddur on the floor. You jump up, right? Most of us will instinctively respond that way. Now, there's a din that if you're in the middle of Shemana Esrei, a siddur falls on the floor. What are you supposed to do? So you know that really the halacha is, you know, the essential halacha is you just continue davening Shemana Esrei. Now, I just want to ask a question. How settled will your mind be? Davening Shemana Esrei, you know that there's a siddur on the floor. How settled will your mind be? It'll probably be like unsettled. You'll probably feel uneasy the whole time. You probably might even rush to finish Shemana Esrei because you want to get that siddur off the floor. So actually, halacha provides for that. It says in halacha that if you are going to be unsettled, if it's going to be distracting your mind, you pick up the siddur. But I want to ask something. Now I want to ask, why indeed does it work that way? Why should your mind be unsettled? Yeah, if there's a siddur on the floor, you're supposed to pick it up. But right now, you're not supposed to pick it up. Why should your mind be unsettled? Why should you be uneasy about it? Most of us will be. The answer is because you have, for so long, been observing this halacha that a siddur is not supposed to be on the floor, that the halacha became a part of you. It settled into your personality. It's not just like a din, you know, it's something you're not supposed to do, so you know you're not supposed to do it, so you avoid it. There are dinim like that, that, you know, they don't happen so frequently. When they come up, we figure out what we're supposed to do, and we do it. We don't necessarily have a deep inner connection with the halacha. But a siddur on the floor, since it's something so common, it's something that we've already been trained towards since we're very little, and we've grown to the extent that it really settled into our consciousness, not just into our consciousness, but the fact that a siddur shouldn't be on the floor becomes a part of my personality. It becomes a part of my personality, and now I can't handle a siddur on the floor in the same way that I can't handle certain things that might be naturally repulsive to me. Not exactly the same thing, but this is what happened. Now, how are we to view that? We have to understand that that is a very, very great sign of growth, and in fact, this is, in a sense, what the Chovas HaLevavos is talking about here. You work yourself over with the dinim of the Torah, with the halachas of the Torah. You are performing and following the halachas of the Torah initially as an externally imposed system, but then the more you keep them, the more you grow into them, the more they become a part of your sensitivities, even though initially, like, why should you be sensitive about it? It's something you're supposed to do and you're not supposed to do. But no, it becomes a part of your sensitivities. It even starts becoming a part of your personality. Right? You know the famous anecdote about the Rebbetzin who was busy in her kitchen, and the Rav came in to get himself something. You know, he put something milchig down in a fleishig place or whatever it is. And the Rebbetzin said to him, "This is fleishig. How can you put that milchig there?" So the Rav started explaining to her, It's fine al pi halacha. This is something cold. It's not, it's not actually spreading grease. It's not doing anything. It's okay. It's fine. So she says to him, I don't want you to trafe up my kitchen with your yeridei and your halachas. Right? So this is a classic story. Probably happens in every kitchen. But here also, what's going on here? What we're seeing is how the sensitivities of the halacha actually become personal sensitivities. They become personal sensitivities. They've made their way into our personality. And this is something very, very great. We have to realize that. We have to appreciate that some things by today that we are already, like second nature to us, are actually a reflection of the fact that the Torah, that Hashem's value system, has become our own. That it's not just something that we do, but something that is actually our personality. That this is right. This is wrong. This is good. This is not good. This we like. This we don't like. Actually reflects the Torah not just as things you do and don't do, but the Torah as a value system. The Torah coming together to form your personality. And this really means that you are turning into Torah. You are reflecting Hashem's likes and dislikes. This is something very, very great. And this is the beginning of what we're talking about when we say that, yeah, your own, we're calling it personality, the psyche, is like the seed planted in the ground. It gets worked over by the mitzvahs of the Torah. And then your personality starts sprouting into that. But really, it goes further than this. This is already something that we have to appreciate. We have to appreciate as something of very, very great value. I'll add more to this. Some things that might seem mundane to us, but these are actually reflections of who we are. You go to a Judaica store, right? Or, okay, you can put this in a number of different ways. You see a picture of the Arba Minim, a painting, okay? Or a picture of the Seder table, or things like that. These things will arouse warm feelings. These things will arouse warm feelings. Why do they arouse warm feelings? Can you explain to me necessarily the significance of the mitzvah of taking the Arba Minim on Sukkot? Why Elulav and Esrig, Hadasim, Aravas? Even people who can't explain it at all, they don't know why you're supposed to be doing this, they still have that nostalgic, warm feeling at the sight of Arba Minim. What does that reflect? So certainly it has to do with the fact that there's very positive association, right? There's an aura of Yom Tov, there's an aura, a celebratory aura, an atmosphere, and these are a part of that atmosphere, and the association is created. And therefore, yes, it arouses positive feelings in us. But we have to realize that that itself is, again, a sign of our personality actually being shaped by the Torah and by the Torah's mitzvahs. And we have to appreciate that fact, that we feel nostalgic about mitzvah items, about things connected with Hashem's Torah, means that the Torah has actually permeated Hashem's value system. Hashem's, so to speak, a million times. Hashem's personality has actually permeated ours. We reflect Hashem's personality. In this sense, it's kind of like you can come and say, on a spiritual level, oh wow, that person looks like his or her father. So this is something very valuable. And this is what the Chovas HaLevavos, this is really the beginning, the first layer of what he's talking about when he says how the Torah is like plowing the ground in order to enable the person himself to actually have that internal drive, that self-drive, to want to do the mitzvahs of Hashem of your own accord. But it really goes further than that also. It goes further than that also. This is something very, very far-reaching. It's very comprehensive, and it can be to very many levels, right? The fact that all of us will recoil at the thought of turning off on a light on Shabbos. It's not just that we don't do it because we know we're not supposed to, but that we'll recoil. If we pick up a pen by accident, we'll drop it as though we were touching a hotcake, right? And then it goes further. If you're talking about there are halachas that are not such a part of the daily routine, and therefore for most people they are not going to be as, they're not going to have it to this extent. The reason why we feel these way about these mitzvahs is because since they're such a regular part of our lives, they've been worked into our personality again, until they really made their way into it. But a mitzvah that comes up here and there, and you have to figure out what the halacha is in this case, it's not going to have that same effect, necessarily. Therefore, it's for this reason that, for example, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says that if a person is having a struggle in a certain area, one of the eitzes is to learn that area in depth. This is more relevant for men than women. It could be relevant for women also in certain ways, but he says an eitzah for a man, let's say, is to really make an in-depth study of those halachas, to really learn it from the sources, not just the bottom line halachas, but to really learn it from the sources in depth with all the varying opinions and understanding the reasoning behind them. He says, by really breaking your head over it, by really breaking your head over it and putting your mind to it, and you are, what you're doing is you're kneading it into yourself, kneading, K-N-E-A-D. You're kneading it into yourself, and this will cause you to develop a passion for what otherwise might just be seen as technical halachas. This is a very important insight because we're understanding from this that you don't necessarily even have to understand the reason for halacha in order to really feel passionate about it. It's enough that it was kneaded into your personality, that it was worked into your personality in such a way that now a person actually really develops strong and passionate feelings about them. Okay. Now, it goes further than this. I'll add another example of this. I want to bring this point home. I'll add another example. I won't add another example. I want to move on to the next step. Sorry. It goes further than this. The Torah makes, Chazal make a statement that sounds like a harsh statement or a very demanding, rigorous statement. It brings the wording of the pasuk that says, "Zeis haTorah Adam Kiamus Bohel." This is the Torah of a person who dies in oihel, in a room. Simply understood, this pasuk is the introduction to the laws of tumas oihel, the tuma of a dead body, of being under the same roof as a dead body. Being under the same roof as a dead body makes one tamei as though he touched the body. And these are detailed halachas, right? So simply understood, the Torah is simply introducing the subject. This is the Torah. In other words, these are the laws of when a person dies in an oihel. But Chazal give a drush on this pasuk. They expound it as follows. Zois haTorah, this Torah, where will you find it? Where is it? Adam kiyamus ba'oihel, when a person dies in the oihel. What oihel? Oihel is often a term used for the Bismedrash. Where will you find the Torah? You'll find the Torah in a person who died in the Beis Medrash. What does that mean? So Chazal say as follows, a person who killed himself over Torah. Ein divrei Torah miskaimin, ela b'mi shememis atzmai aleha. The Torah will only really take root in a person who kills himself over it. That's what Chazal say. The Torah will only really take root in a person who kills himself over it. Now, what does that mean? So simply understood, what it means is that, yes, a person who really wants to succeed in Torah has to be ready to push himself very hard, to push himself very hard in a rigorous training program that we might call killing himself over it. He's going to have to fight fatigue, he's going to have to give up on some good times, he's going to have to skip events, etc. Kill himself over it. He might have to give up on certain luxuries. Okay. The Chazon Ish comes with a very, very profound understanding of this. He gives a deeper level of understanding of what this means. It does not necessarily mean killing himself in that sense. What he says is, the Avdinim of the Torah that requires sacrifice. I'm not talking about study of Torah right now necessarily. But it comes back to things that we've discussed in the past. The Torah requires levels of self-control. It requires you to overcome urges in many instances, etc. Let's say you have a person who, like Chazal described, that when the Torah was offered to each nation, each had their thing that, they couldn't give up. You know, this nation couldn't give up stealing, and this nation couldn't give up killing. Because this is mamish a part of our identity. This is a part of who we are. So, let's say you have a person who really enjoys lobster. And he's starting to learn about Torah and mitzvahs. And he's growing closer and closer. And he's coming closer and closer, and he reaches the point where, yeah, he wants to make the transformation in his life. But there's one thing that's holding him back. And that is his love of lobster. This is already like a part of who I am. This is me. How could I let go of this? This is like, this is a very inherent part of me. So the Chazon Ish says like this, that this can be taken to many more refined levels that are very relevant to all of us. It's from people who aren't eating lobster. But he says, you know what, that's right, giving up lobster is, in a sense, like killing yourself. The me that you know today is inherently entwined in lobster. Taking away the lobster, it's a different me. It's somebody else. Where's the old me? You've killed the old me. It's true. There was a previous me that was essentially, inherently identified with lobster. By stopping it, you've killed that person. That person doesn't exist anymore. What do you have instead? You have killed that person, and now you have accessed a deeper person instead, a more refined person, a person with more refined spiritual sensitivities, because he got rid of a physical layer, a material layer that was really just obstructing him. So the way the Chazon Ish puts it is to kill the superficial you. This is what Chazal are telling us. Kill the superficial you, the one who you think is you right now. Kill the superficial you by overcoming a number of things that seem to you like, this is just who I am. And then he says, you will access the deeper you. He says, you kill yourself on the level of the shitchius achaim, on the superficial level of life, and thereby you will access toicham shel achaim. You will reach deeper, richer levels of life that weren't accessible as long as this superficial you was still in the way. You got rid of that superficial you, and now you are discovering a deeper, more refined you, after you've peeled away that superficial level. So, this is to a large extent what the Chovos HaLevavos is telling us. He says, you want to approach the dinim of the Torah, we're talking about it as an externally imposed system. That can begin as and remain just technical collection of do's and don'ts. But if you're approaching this as something, I want this whole system to really start refining me, to really bring out more of my depth. We all have more depth than we realize. We all have deeper insight than we realize. Just we often haven't accessed it. You say, I want to approach the Torah because I want it to reface my personality. You will find yourself accessing deeper levels of refinement, of sensitivity, of compassion, kindness, etc., as a result of this system. So this is what the Chovos HaLevavos is telling us. You, your personality is a raw seed. We've already discussed earlier that a person who just wants to take himself as is and say, I am going to live a highly moral, ethical life, fat chance, all the different raw elements of your personality are going to get in the way. As long as it doesn't conflict, you will be very, very moral and ethical. As long as it doesn't conflict with your pride, as long as it doesn't conflict with your money, as long as it doesn't conflict with the different lusts and desires that you have, you'll be very moral and ethical. And that will leave, you'll leave yourself enough of a margin where you have plenty of room for your pride, your money, you don't have to be ethical and moral in those areas, but still enough of a little window here, there, you know, I'll do things that are good for the environment. A couple of other, you know, lip service kinds of things that I'm leading a moral life. I have values, and therefore you will convince yourself to believe that you live a life dictated by moral and ethical values. While to a very, very large extent, you are sunken in your own ego, money, physical, material ambitions. I'll just give an example of this. I'll give an example of this. My sister was once debating with a non-observant Jewish girl who she had a relationship with her. I don't remember if it was from school or from whatever it is, maybe some Kiruv initiative. But this was a girl who lived in, you know, I don't know, some apartment in Manhattan, basically living by herself and studying to become whatever she was going to become, and a real irreligious girl living in New York, Manhattan. And she said to my sister, you know, the Orthodox are really living a very selfish life. They have many children. They have many children. They're focused only on themselves and their families because they're using up Earth's resources. And in a few generations down the line, the result of this is going to be that there are going to be, you know, families in third world countries that are simply not going to have food because they are exhausting the world's resources. Okay, I'm not going to bother with the continuation of the discussion, but I just want to note this gem of wisdom. I want to study this gem of wisdom a little bit. Here is a girl who is living the compassionate life. She's living a life of sensitivity to others. Who are those others? Very convenient, people who don't exist now. Those are the best people to be compassionate to. They don't get in the way. They have no demands. People who don't exist now. People are going to exist in 200 years and not in your area of the world. Those are the best people to focus your chesed efforts in and live a very highly moral and ethical life. And you know what? It's great because you can live a life of self-absorption. You never have to make the commitment of marriage. You wouldn't want to do that because it might endanger those poor people who don't exist. You will never make the commitment of marriage. You will not raise a family. You will live a life that's completely self-centered, earning money, living it up, doing the nightlife, etc., etc., because of your moral conviction that we have to care for families that do not exist now and might exist in 200 years. And chas v'shalom, if I am going to bring 8 children into the world who are going to eat up some more food, where will they get their food from? There you go. It's an example of moral, ethical life that leaves plenty of room for. While, look at these selfish, self-centered people, right, who want to raise a family of 8 children with the same income that she has as a single girl. You know, it doubled. There's a husband and wife, they're both bringing in an income, and they, because of their selfish motives, are dedicating their life to much less means, right? They're living much more limited financial ability, and so much of their life is dedicated to taking care of these children. These are selfish people, right? So this is the point. A person as is, Ayir Pere Adam Yivaled. A person is naturally a selfish, raw person who, once he reaches a stage in life that he has a certain need to satisfy the understanding that there's a concept of morality, he'll find the ways of satisfying that. You take the Torah because you want to really start working on that person that's called you. You are either born into it, and therefore this it's been working you from the cradle, or you came into it later of life and you started applying it to yourself. But whatever it is, what's it doing? It's giving you a very significant workover, not just for the purpose of you doing these rules, because these are things that have to happen and these are things that don't, but it's very, very much for the purpose of refining you, polishing you, rubbing away many of those layers where we're caked with mud of selfishness, of egocentrism. And then what? And then what? Then it enables us to begin connecting to all kinds of sensitivities outside ourselves. And that's why you'll find that why is it that some of the, you know, the people who are busiest with their own families are doing the most chesed around, etc. You apply yourself to the rules of the Torah, you start really rubbing away many of the aspects of self-gratification, of selfishness, etc. And all of a sudden, this gives room not just for these mitzvahs themselves to be fulfilled, but for all kinds of other sensitivities to start setting in, all kinds of Whether it's in the most simple sense, we'll talk about, yes, sensitivities to other people. The Torah's regimen makes it inevitable that you're going to have to start becoming more sensitive to people around you than you would have naturally. Right? All kinds of dinim in the Torah that are there for us, we're not even going to be keeping them today because they're not relevant to our lives. But if you just look at it in terms of what type of program the Torah is trying to put you through, dinim of sensitivity, right? You are not allowed to have to muzzle an ox when it's threshing wheat, right? If you have an employer picking grapes from your vineyard, you are required to allow him to eat as much as he likes. He's not allowed to take. The Torah is working with both sides at the same time. He is not allowed to fill up a basket to take home. But you cannot prohibit him from eating as he works. So many dinim like that, which, whether you like it or not, right, the din of the Yom Titin Tzchari, the way the Torah says it, you hired a person, you have to pay him that day. Why? And the Torah says, Kelev Anoisis Nafsha, you have to think about him. He's hoping to come home with something for his family. So all these things, whether you like it or not, they are opening you up to appreciating the other person's feelings, to becoming sensitive to him. And then it just goes and mushrooms further, right? You become attuned to what the Torah wants you to become attuned to. And then these sensitivities can grow. All kinds of other things. This is Ben Adam L'Chaveroi, but there's all kinds of other dinim of Ben Adam L'Makom. You can become a lot more sensitive to all kinds of different spiritual sensitivities, concepts, because of the fact that you have learned a lot of self-control, that you're not automatically giving in to every urge you have because of many of the Torah's dinim in all kinds of areas of life, from the way you live your married life to the things you eat to the things you wear to your home, to your business dealings, all kinds of things. I'm not even talking honesty right now, just the isser of interest. There's nothing dishonest about charging interest. But once again, the Torah is simply showing you, you're in business, you still have to be sensitive to the person opposite you. I'm going to put a check on you here, a check on you there, from being able to just capitalize without end. And then, what happens? If you're going through this with an alert mind, if you're going through this with a desire to grow, then all kinds of other sensitivities will start settling in that are not necessarily the dinim of the Torah per se. They are resultant sensitivities from the halachas of the Torah. And this is the process that the Chavis Halavis is describing. You'll start feeling all kinds of other sensitivities, both toward Hashem and also toward other people. And what is this in essence? These sensitivities is actually Hashem. Once you apply yourself sincerely to the Torah, Hashem will then help these other things sprout. He'll guide you to these feelings, to these sentiments, and you will become a Jew who is already grown above just the level of reward and punishment. But you have now brought these feelings into your personality, and they're continuing to grow and to sprout, and you are becoming a magnificent, not just observer of Torah, but a personality of Torah, not just of the precise laws of Torah, but of the values of Torah, the sensitivities of Torah. You are now living. This is the process that the Chavis Halavis is describing. Now, I'll end this off with a mashal. That helps bring home the point. Here's a question that a Rebbe of mine, a very big chinuch authority, Rebbe Chiel Yaakovson, same last name as me, he's also a relative, noted. He said that we operate, much of chinuch is operating with the premise that when you train a person to do something again and again and again, he is going to continue doing it, right? We have our children, we forbid them from doing malachas on Shabbos, and we make them do different mitzvahs, we make them say brachas, we make them put on tzitzis, etc. Not because we want them to be doing it as kids, but because we work with the premise that by making them do it again, 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 they become so accustomed to it that they are going to carry it with them further through life. It becomes habit, and it'll stick, and they're going to carry it with them further through life, right? That's the idea of chinuch. It's to set them off in a way that's going to carry them through life. It's not just to get the kids to do the right thing now. So now, he said the Chafetz Chaim challenged this premise. Now this premise is really taught in the Sfarim, right? Adam nif'al kafi pe'ulai, so the things you do affect you, they get ingrained in your personality, as we've been discussing, and therefore they'll become second nature. Right? You know that with driving also. You practice, then it becomes second nature. First time you tried to drive, you started driving, you couldn't imagine how you would be eating a sandwich and talking to somebody at the same time while keeping track of all the different details. And then a few years down the line, you're doing it naturally. So the Chafetz Chaim said, on the one hand we see that, but on the other hand we see the exact opposite also. He said like this, he said, he used the following phenomenon, but we all know these phenomena. He said the Cossacks of Tsarist Russia were known for their extreme speed, for their alacrity, their precision, their determination. These were fierce warriors, determined warriors, very, very speedy, very, very skilled. And they would serve a 25-year term in the army, and after that, they would retire, and they would be given a stipend for the rest of their life. After 25 years of service in the army, they'd retire with a stipend for the rest of their life such that they could live out the rest of their life in retirement. So the Chafetz Chaim said that it was as famous as their speed and determination was, once they would retire, they became notorious for their laziness. Like, it was known that they would retire and spend the rest of their lives sprawled in front of the fireplace in the local pubs. So Chafetz Chaim said, I don't understand. This is exactly the opposite of the principle we've been talking about. A person is constantly exercising certain qualities, right, certain actions. They should stay ingrained in him. These people should, you know, for the rest of their lives, we should see them getting up at 5 in the morning and doing an intense exercise routine. No, he said, these people were so famous that it became an expression. You call a lazy person a retired Cossack. That was like the term. That was you had a kid who was very lazy. You said, you're acting like a retired Cossack. So the Chafetz Chaim said, how do we reconcile the two principles of human nature? So the Chafetz Chaim said as follows. He said, the difference is, he said, these people, the whole life, their 25 years of running, what were they really doing? They were running toward their place at the fireplace. That's what they were doing the whole time. That was the Chafetz Chaim's terse answer. What did he mean by that? What he meant by that is, these people went through 25 years of energy, speed, alacrity, not because they were interested in it. They weren't interested in it. It was forced on them. It was forced on them, and they were waiting for the day when they could stop all this and just spread out, sprawl themselves at the fire. So this is a very big principle in chinuch. Right, and we see this often, right? A child is pushed to do something, push, and suddenly he reaches a point. He's been doing it for 10 years, and the moment he gets a little bit of liberty, he drops it all. Like, you know, you can hold down a spring and then you let go. And why? Because he's been doing the act externally, but there was never an interconnection. He never had interest in it. The condition for it to really permeate the personality is, if it's being done with an interest, if you want it, you identify with what you're doing, and you want it to permeate your personality. If you are doing the repeated action because you're interested in its effect, you want it to affect you, then as you do it more and more and more, it really will. So here we're coming back to the point that the Chovei Salvavus is telling us. We're not just meant to take the mitzvahs of the Torah, what we've been calling the externally imposed program, and to do it mindlessly. No, you want to be doing it with the understanding of what the Chovei Salvavus says, that I want this to transform me, I want this to elevate me, I want this to permeate my personality and make me into that greater, more sensitive person, more refined person in all these different ways. This is what I want out of it. You open your mind and heart to it, to the actions that you're doing externally, and then, yeah, you will merit the siyata d'shmaya that the Chovei Salvavus is describing there. Hashem will, after watching you apply yourself, He will join you in your efforts and really start infusing you with that elevation, with those higher sensitivities, and you will turn into that magnificent tree that the Chovei Salvavus is describing. We'll end off by saying this. When we talk about the Churban, when we talk about Tisha B'Av, when we're talking about mourning the Churban. Much of the rebuilding, especially as we're seeing today, how Hashem is basically showing us how you have a comfortable Olam Hazeh. Watch, in the year 2020, with all the sophistication, all the technology, I can drain Olam Hazeh of everything you enjoyed about it. This is what we've been taught this year, right? When we sit down and we're mourning about the Churban, and we are waiting for the Beis HaMikdash, we have to realize that this begins with an inner process. It begins with building ourselves. A built Beis HaMikdash is a result, it's a consequence of a built Klal Yisrael. Right? A very, very important part of the process is not just waiting for it to happen, but for us to be providing a Klal Yisrael that is built up on its inside. That's why this is a process of building, and it's a period of building. The period of the 3 weeks, the 9 days, the week of Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av. The focus is on mourning in order to understand, yes, there are ruins here. There are ruins there that have to be rebuilt. How do we go about rebuilding it? We go about rebuilding it starting from ourselves. And in a large sense, finishing with ourselves. There'll be other things that may spill out. Once we're building ourselves, different effects might spill out to other areas, and that's great. But it's the building, really, the process that we've been describing here, about turning myself into the magnificent Jew, into the magnificent Yisrael that Hashem was envisioning when He took Klal Yisrael for a nation, and such a Jew will indeed be worthy of a built Beis HaMikdash, which is the cherry on the top of such a Klal Yisrael. Mitzvah Hashem, let's be zeiche to see that happen yet this year, this week. We'll end here, and we'll unmute and we'll part.